This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
The International Association of Mutual Benefit Societies, known by the acronym AIM, A-I-M, is the international umbrella organization of nonprofit healthcare payers, health mutuals, and health insurance funds. AIM defends access to healthcare for all through solidarity-based and nonprofit healthcare coverage, and provides a platform for members to represent their interests to both European and international institutions. I am Alberto Grignolo, editor of DIA's Global Forum. Today, we are joined by AIM Executive Director, Mr. Menno Arnout. Mr. Arnout is responsible for overall coordination of AIM's working groups for pharmaceuticals and medical devices and for long-term care. He was also one of the panelists featured at DIA's first BioVenture Day in March 2017 in Glasgow, a new platform designed to connect stakeholders critical to the success of BioVentures. We're going to be discussing with Mr. Arnout the ongoing evolution of biotechnology as science and as a business in Europe. Welcome, Mr. Arnout, and thank you for joining us today.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
How would you describe the role of the payer in the drug development process? How has it evolved over the past few years?
That's an interesting question. If you talk about drug development as a process from, let's say, fundamental research until market access, then the payer is not playing a very vital role in the actual development process itself. Unless you define the payer also the government that finances, for example, fundamental research, then you can say that the payer is also involved in the beginning. But the payer itself as the insurer is not the one paying for fundamental research. So we are really quite at the end of the process. And the shift over the last few years, I would say that payers become more and more interested in this development process. They see expensive drugs coming their way. They see aging societies. They see reducing funds and increasing costs, overall healthcare costs, and they feel the urge or the need to be more involved in that development process. You see increasing interest in early dialogues. Discussion with industry about what do you have in your pipelines or what should be in your pipelines and what should not be in your pipelines. Those kinds of discussions. What kind of data do we need when the drug enters the market or is presented for reimbursement? What kind of data do we need to evaluate whether the drug that has been developed in that process, whether that brings added value to the system and things like this. Is it safe? Does it work? Payers have hardly a role currently in the actual development process for now, but I see a trend to payers becoming more and more interested in.
Is this really happening on a significant scale? For example, are payers really reaching out to pharmaceutical companies and asking them about their pipelines, or conversely, are companies reaching out to payers to engage them in that conversation? Are these interactions really happening on a significant scale, or are they more anecdotal at this point?
Yeah, I think that they're at this moment still too anecdotal. But I think that there is a trend towards more of these kind of dialogues, but also internal thinking within payers about what is happening in this, what kind of drugs are being, I'm not even talking about the dialogue, but about knowing what is going on and what is coming towards them. I see among payers sort of a tendency to think about this more, and there is anecdotal example of increasing dialogue. But I would say that in the coming period, this kind of trend will increase.
There are also. Is it fair to say that not all payers are created equal in the sense that some would be very interested in companies' pipelines, while others would not be so interested or may not know how to engage companies in this type of conversation?
Yes, of course. And it depends also on people. Some are very eager to engage in those kinds of dialogues, and others are more reluctant. Or organizations say, no, we wait for the drug to come out of the pipeline and then we will judge it. And others say, no, we have to be earlier with this. There are also payer organizations that say, should we not become an actual player in the development process itself. Why should we leave the development of drugs to companies, but should we not integrate that in our own organizations? That is definitely not happening, and I don't see that happening, but there is a discussion going on about what is our role in the development process and how can we understand that better and how can we create for ourselves and for industry some sort of more predictability, more certainty about what's going on.
You're suggesting perhaps, and I'm just exploring the topic with you, you're suggesting that perhaps some payers feel that they could do a good job in advising companies on how to develop drugs that could be, in the end, more cost-effective, more valuable from the payer's point of view?
Well, I don't think that payers have the feeling that they would be better in developing a drug or telling how to develop it, but more in discussions about what kind of drugs do we need or where is the unmet need or how can we ensure that you actually develop the drugs that the market or that the payer needs, and don't see the payer really sit on the seat of the developer.
In your observation, have any drug developers been sympathetic to such inputs from payers?
I think that drug industry is also interested in making the market access easier. Huh? So if that they can prepare their product in a way that the payer can more easily come to a decision about reimbursement or not, I get the feeling that industry is also interested in making it easier for them to bring the product to the market and to have payers that are more predictable, so to say, that they know well in advance, okay, if we develop these kind of drugs and if we provide these kind of data that shows the efficacy of the drug, then the likelihood of it being reimbursed is bigger, then industry would be interested in those kind of dialogues.
For several decades, the industry has become really good at speaking with regulators and mm-hmm. delivering to regulators' expectations, or certainly understanding regulators' expectations all over the world. Does the industry have a good understanding of payers' expectations? Is the ability of the industry and payers to communicate well with each other sufficiently refined these days, or is there a need for further development of this communication pathway and skill between these parties?
I definitely see that trend that you described, that the communication between the industry and the regulator is improving. And I see that to a lesser extent between payers and the industry. And that is, similarly between the regulator and the payer, there is still quite a big gap that the payer sees itself confronted with a drug coming to the market, where it then struggles to come to a decision about reimbursement. And if there would have been the gap between regulator and payer would be smaller, then there could also be a more joint approach to what kind of data do we need to collect to come to a decision, and not and regulator and payer would work less in isolation of each other, which I think is good for payer, good for regulator, and good for industry as well.
Are payers, in your observation, basically in a no-win situation, meaning that if they accept to reimburse drugs that they perceive to be high-priced, they are going to be financially strapped, and if they decline to reimburse drugs that are perceived to be high-priced but needed by patients in desperate needs, they'll be criticized for denying life-saving therapies to patients? Are payers in a no-win situation at this point?
In a no-win situation, they are in a very difficult situation. It is very difficult to explain, no, we don't reimburse a drug, to a patient that has no alternative available. In those kind of discussions, it's very difficult to bring the argumentation or the reasoning of the payer to the forefront. I mean, the more emotional and the individual perception and the individual patient and the picture of the individual patient is, of course, a much stronger message than, yeah, we are ensuring overall sustainability of a healthcare system and a solidarity-based healthcare system. And we are not convinced of the added value of treatment X or the cost-effectiveness of treatment Y. Those are very difficult ethically, but also politically, very difficult discussions, of course. What should be reimbursed and what should not be reimbursed?
Against this backdrop, then, and in the current situation, what do you predict the role of the payer will be in the next 5 years?
I think that that trend that started, that I just described, that payers want to be more have a more active role and be earlier involved, that kind of trend I see further develop in the coming years. And I see also it's a slightly different trend, but I see that at least within the European Union, that member states and national payers are more and more collaborating in terms of keeping track of a pipeline or discussing pipelines or getting insight in pipelines, working together on health technology assessment, studies and appraisals, and even a trend towards more joint negotiations and maybe even a joint procurement. I mean, this kind of trend was totally unthinkable, I think, 5 years ago. And now you see, at least within the EU, more and more pilots between a few countries where on these elements, especially HTA, but also in joint negotiations, there is a trend towards more collaboration between EU member states. So that's another trend that I see.
In the BioVenture Day in Glasgow recently, you represented the payer view in a panel discussion that was titled Immuno-Oncology, Therapeutic Breakthrough Area or Nightmare for Healthcare Funding. What were your main points during that presentation?
The first point is that these kind of dialogues that take place within events like this BioVenture Day, but there are similar initiatives elsewhere, I think that these dialogues between payers and industry, that those dialogues are very important. That was my first point, I think. Then I think that to ensure, I mean, the title, I would say, to ensure breakthrough and making innovation accessible to everybody and to maintain a solidarity-based healthcare system, I think that transparency has to increase in a few ways. Without transparency, it's very difficult to have discussions about how to ensure access to innovation. For example, transparency about the cost of R&D. How much is industry actually dedicating financially to research and development? And who actually makes those costs? Is it the industry or are it publicly funded institutions? Are public subsidies being used to facilitate private institutions to develop drugs from the subsidies from charities? Does industry receive tax credits to also to facilitate R&D? So these kind of questions, I think that is still too much of a black box, and to have a good discussion about is there a climate for innovation or not, that kind of transparency is really needed. Another point with regard to transparency, I think, is transparency of clinical data. That is also often not really readily available for regulator and payer or reimbursement decision maker. So I think there also we could win something. And the last point on transparency that I made in Glasgow refers to transparency of prices. I mean, it is very difficult to talk about, is this price facilitating innovation and is that really ensuring breakthrough innovations if those prices are secret? And so also transparency of prices, I think, is relevant.
Pointing to transparency on the part of industry mostly, is there an opportunity for payers to also show more transparency, and if so, in what regard? Or are you saying that it's industry that must be more transparent, but payers do not need to be any more transparent than they already are?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that we are quite transparent, but I don't know what kind of information are payers keeping for themselves, or what are we not transparent about?
I'm really asking whether there are ways in which payers could be more transparent, maybe about what size budgets they have to reimburse medicines to patients that need them. Is that a matter of public record? Is it a transparent matter, or is it something that is opaque and not disclosed, and should it be disclosed?
The lack of transparency there comes mainly, I think, from the lack of insight in prices. That you don't, I mean, the overall budget spent on pharmaceuticals or on healthcare is fairly transparent, and then the willingness to pay, or how big could the budget be, or how much of the budget could be dedicated to healthcare or to pharmaceuticals. Yeah, I mean, that is a political decision. And the political decision is not the coming 10 years we will increase our healthcare budget by so much. I mean, that is often a sort of a yearly exercise. But I mean, how much is being spent on healthcare and on pharmaceuticals is, as far as I can see it, a transparent figure. I mean, the public sector is not allowed to keep these figures behind undisclosed. The public could say, you are spending so much on drug B. What kind of volume was involved, or what price did you pay? And then the payer has to say, no, I'm not allowed to disclose those prices. Then you can say, is that from a public transparency of the public service? Is that legitimate to do that? Say, no, this is taxpayers' money. We want to be able to see what you spend on what, and that we don't disclose how much we pay for defense, or how much a rocket costs, or missiles cost, and things like that, or how much we spend on national security. Those kinds of figures are, well, considered to be legitimate to remain secret. But prices of pharmaceuticals, that is something that I think there is more and more going to be questions about. Why are you not making those kind of figures transparent as a government? What do you spend on what? And they say, no, we cannot, because we have a deal with industry that we don't disclose prices that we pay. This kind of debates haven't been taking place a lot, I think, in the public domain lately, but with governments more and more saying, no, we are not paying this because it is too expensive, or our budgets are limited, they say, show us then what you have been paying so far. If you ask transparency on the side of the payer, I think that we are most secretive about the prices that we are paying.
At the panel in Glasgow, what was the most surprising or even controversial point raised during the discussion, and what was your reaction to it?
They related a lot to the discussion about value of innovation. And payers, of course, agree totally that if you produce something or you bring something to the market that has value or high value, then you should be rewarded more than if you bring something to the market that has only limited value. At the same time, that discussion is very difficult because there is not really a clear definition of value. And value is also different for everybody. Everybody perceives value differently. And has innovation in itself also value? I mean, there are all kinds of questions that you can ask about value. Is innovation in itself value? Is tackling a high unmet need, is that more valuable than tackling not so high unmet need? Should we also value social and psychological aspects of life? If a drug has value in that direction, should that also be incorporated when we measure value at the societal impact, the impact on caregivers, impact on the dignity of the patient, or of the convenience of the patient, or the invasiveness of the treatment? I mean, all these kinds of elements can in one way or another maybe be included in the value, but how exactly and how to do that in a uniform way, that is very difficult. But I agree, or the payers agree, that value should be reflected in the price in one way or another, how difficult that in practice will be. But it should not be the only element in the equation. It's not only about the value of a drug to set the price. And that was a bit the surprising element, or how did you say, the controversial point. I think, and our payers think, that we should reach some sort of price that is fair, a fair price. And a fair price includes elements of value, but not only. You should also look at volume of sales. How many boxes are you going to sell? If you sell a lot, then maybe the price of the box can be lower. I mentioned already the cost of R&D. That has to, in one way or another, also be reflected in price that we pay. The budgetary impact, so the combination between the price and the volume, but also the willingness or the ability to pay for payers. Is that in some countries that's the individual willingness to pay, but within the European Union that is much more the societal willingness or the willingness of an entire society to pay the product in a more solidarity-based manner. During these discussions, to come back to your question, I think that the focus was very much on value, and price should be based on value. And if we create $250,000 value with this product because we save somebody's life and he can live 10 quality adjusted life years longer or whatever, how you measure the value, then the payer should pay those €250,000. And we think that that is not fair, but it's also not possible because of what I just said about the budgetary impact and the willingness and then the ability to pay those prices. So there is still quite a gap between the approach to price by the industry and the approach of price and value by payers. So there we have.
So how to resolve this impasse? You mentioned transparency is part of the solution. Are there any other elements of a future solutions? How do we solve this?
I think that,
as a society.
I think that dialogue is really, very, very important, and not dialogues that industry makes its point and payers make their point and that's it. I mean, that's not a dialogue. And until now, it is really a bit, we think A and you think B and there is a gap between A and B and that's it. I mean,
instead of a dialogue, we have two monologues. Is that what you're
saying? Yes, exactly. We have two monologues, and the meetings that I go to are, they are happening, so that is a good start, but we have to become more talking to each other than or talking with each other than to each other. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to leave it at that, and obviously much more to be said and done on this very, very important topic. Thank you so much, Mr. Arnout, for joining us today and for sharing your insights.
Thank you very much.
For the AA Global Forum, I am Alberto Grignolo.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.